EFT. You're here with me. Simply amazing.
Simply amazing.
Yes. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Like, we prepared for it, yeah.
This hour of programming is supported by the listeners of WEFT and by the Champaign Center Partnership, who foster a vibrant, inviting, and active core downtown, midtown, and campus town by strengthening businesses and building community. CCP's vision is to create healthy and vibrant micro-urban areas for residents and visitors through marketing, advocacy, and special events. CCP encourages and educates the public to shop locally throughout the year. Local businesses need your help more than ever. When you spend $100 at a locally owned business, $68 out of that $100 stays right here in our community. For more information about the Champaign Center Partnership, visit them on their website at champaigncenter.com, or you can give them a call at 217-352-2400.
Hello and good evening. You're listening to WEFT 90.1 FM radio, and of course you can listen to us online at weft.org. My name is Ben. This is the program Where We Are At. Just to let you know, this is a pre-recorded show. The date is Monday, September 19th, 2022. Right now, all eligible households in Champaign County can begin making appointments to apply for LIHEAP, that's Low Income Home Energy Assistance. The actual appointments to apply for LIHEAP will then begin on Thursday, September 1st at either 1776 East Washington Street in Urbana, 2009 Round Barn Road in Champaign, or the Rantoul Business Center located at 601 South Century Boulevard, Suite 1314, 1314. Those making appointments could choose which location they prefer. All three locations will be open for appointments Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. starting on September 1st. And this information can be found on the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission website, ccrpc.org. Just click on Programs and Services and then go to Low Income Home Energy Assistance, LIHEAP. And just to let you know, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates.
Here are some public service announcements.
The CU at Home Men's Emergency Shelter is provided year-round, 365 days a year. Intakes begin at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Service provided at CU at Home at 70 East Washington Street in Champaign, which is the former Times Center location. Light snacks are available. Showers and laundry are available in emergency situations. You can contact Thomas Welt. The phone number is 217-819-4569. Again, the phone number 217-819-4569. You could also call 217-649-2200. Again, that phone number 217-649-2200. After business hours and need shelter, call the CU at Home Outreach Hotline. That phone number is 217-888-0329. And again, that last one, the CU at Home Outreach Hotline, phone number 217-888-0329. There is also Austin's Place, which is a shelter for women, which provides overnight emergency shelter for women year-round. Intakes begin at 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. This resource is housed at CU at Home's 70 East Washington Street facility in Champaign, which is the former Times Center building. Light snacks are provided. Showers and laundry are also available. For more information, you can contact Chloe Hansen. The phone number is 217-819-4569. Again, that phone number, 217-819-4569. They also have a website, CU at Home, which you can Google. It would probably just be possible to Google "See You at Home Shelter Austin's Place." Weebly.com. And after business hours is the same number, is the same phone number as before that I read a few minutes ago. See You at Home outreach hotline 217-888-0329. Again, that phone number is 217-888-0329. The Daily Bread Soup Kitchen's mission is to feed the hungry in our community. Currently, they provide a hot, nutritional meal in a biodegradable clamshell box plus a hearty sack lunch to go from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. 7 days a week. Because of COVID-19, though, they cannot currently offer inside dining. The Daily Bread Soup Kitchen is located on 116 North 1st Street in Champaign. Their phone number is 217-356-7687. Their website is Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, all one word, dailybreadsoupkitchen.com. And again, they are located on 116 North 1st Street in Champaign, and they offer a free sack lunch to go from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. 7 days a week, and we thank them for their hospitality and for the work that they have been doing. Dental assistance, you can go to the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. If you would like, their website is ccrpc.org, and then when you get onto the website, you'll go to Programs and Services and then click on Emergency Rent Assistance. But yes, Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, again, that website ccrpc.org. Please consider supporting the programming you love. WFT will gladly accept that vehicle you've been looking to get rid of. Our vehicle donation program provides an effortless option to support WFT Community Radio. You can give CARS, C-A-R-S, Charitable Adult Rides and Services, a call at 1-855-500-RIDE. Or fill out the secure donation form at CarEasy, CarEasy.org. Just remember to designate WEFT as the nonprofit beneficiary of your gift. WEFT truly appreciates supporters like you. If you're wondering what is showing at the Virginia Theater in Champaign, you can look up updates that are posted as soon as they become available. For more information, go to the Virginia Theater website, The Virginia, all one word, thevirginia.org, thevirginia.org. You can also call their phone number, 217-356-9063. Again, that phone number is 217-356-9063. You can also email them at virginia@champagneparks.org. The Canteen Run is a mobile truck that offers food, drinks, blankets, and human kindness to those on the streets on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, starting at 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Drivers are needed and require a background check. Training is provided on the spot. Contact Barb Davies or Jason Fisher at cucanteenrun@gmail.com. Again, that is CU Canteen Run, CUCANTEENRUN @gmail.com. You can also visit www.CUCANTEENRUN.org. So that website is www.CUCANTEENRUN.org. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates.
From Washington, D.C., this is On the Ground. Residents of Jackson, Mississippi, suffering without running water, spoke out this week at a national town hall sponsored by the Poor People's Campaign.
As of right now, I feel like my right has been violated and taken away from me because the simple fact of it is I can't even bathe, brush my teeth, wash my hair, do the things that us people human people are supposed to do.
We feel attacked. We feel attacked, and we feel as though this is some sort of coordinated effort to ruin our city.
The failed infrastructure of the capital of Mississippi is a long-standing problem rooted in the history of racism in the state, as well as in the lack of national investment in infrastructure that provides water as a human right.
When they tried to take our airport, there was an effort to take over our school district, right? And we were able to stop that. And now there's an effort to take over our water. None of this is coincidental. We've said, free the land, clean the water, and make it public.
All that coming up on the show. Welcome to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org, voices of resistance from the nation's capital for September 16th, 2022. I'm Esther Averam, and for this hour, we'll hear the voices of attendees at a virtual town hall held September 12th by the Poor People's Campaign. The latest water crisis in Jackson began at the end of August when heavy rains led to an overflow of the Pearl River and flooding that disabled a water treatment plant, leaving many residents with either no water or just a trickle from the tap. But even before that, Jackson's 150,000 residents had been under a boil water notice for several weeks, and back in February, freezing temperatures disabled the water treatment system. As residents explain, today's crisis is decades in the making. Our coverage of the town hall begins with the Reverend William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign.
We welcome you tonight. As you see on the graphics, the Poor People's Campaign Mississippi Mall Monday, sponsored by Repair Through the Breach, the Mississippi Poor People's Campaign, the National Poor People's Campaign at Conroe Center, and Roland Martin Unfiltered. And we're all coming together on tonight and for this nationwide speak out against the Jackson water crisis so that you get the truth from the people who have seen it, who have lived it for years, who've been there on the ground, and who are really the moral voices and the moral heroes of our time, and also from the mayor who's been standing with the people, a people's mayor, a nonpartisan people's mayor. Clean water is a human right, and we're calling for a fix that should have been done years and years ago to be done now, and for the fix to be done, and not the fix to be in. Not trying to fix the narrative, blame the people, blame the mayor, but to fix the problem in Jackson. I want to open tonight very simply because I want to get to these families. There is a scripture that I think brothers and sisters from Jackson and all over the world, and Mayor and Roland and Liz, that is so befitting Daniel at this moment. I was reminded of it riding down the road to D.C., 2 Kings. Chapter 2, the people of the city said to Elisha, you know, Elisha was a preacher. He said, look, our Lord, this town is well situated, like Jackson, well situated, a hub of the South, as you can see, but there's a problem. The water is bad. Elisha says, bring me a new bowl. In other words, stop doing the same old stuff, same old blame, the same old denying, he said, and put some salt in it. So they brought it to him. Then he went out to the spring and threw the salt into it. In modern day time, the salt might be the Federal Corps of Engineers rather than trying to blame the people. Blame, an action has to be taken. He threw the salt in and he said to the water, this is what the Lord says. I have healed this water. So poisoning water is immoral. Poisoning people's water is sin. It's sinful. It's wrong. It's unrighteous. And those of you who are working and fighting to have the water fixed, you're on the side of righteousness, on the side of morality. He says, I have healed this water. Never again. That's what we want to hear. That's what the mayor's working for. That's what these families want. They want it fixed so that never again will it cause death or make the land unproductive.
Verse 22 says, and the water has remained pure to this day, according to the word that Elisha has spoken. That text tells us water doesn't get clean by itself. It only gets clean when there is a decision that it is immoral to leave communities with dirty water. It would not be allowed if it was in Mar-a-Lago. It would not be allowed if it was in the heart of the of Washington, D.C. It should not be allowed in the city that holds the capital of Mississippi. And now the crisis hurts everybody. You'll see tonight black people and white people, young and old and male and female, standing together saying, we are the citizens, and this doesn't have to be. That text reminds us that water is only poison and impure when actions are not taken to keep it clean. It doesn't have to be this way. Mayor and the citizens, members of that family, they have a plan. Mississippi is not in lack of money, nor the federal government to fix it. What we have had is a lack of political action and moral consciousness. And that must change because, as Elisha said, what all of us should hope, not only in Jackson, but in Flint or wherever it is when it comes to dirty, poisonous water that poisons people and poisons the land, we all should be fighting for this to have this to be said. Never again. Never again. Ms. Danielle Holmes will introduce all of the families, and the families will testify from their own space in their own place.
Thank you all so much. My name is Danielle Holmes. I'm a national social justice organizer, Affairs of the Breach, and work with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for more revival. And I want to just start off by introducing impacted speakers tonight, first starting with my sister, amazing sister, Rakia Lumumba, who will lay some foundation on why we're here tonight, as well as share her own impacted story. Rakia?
I'm Rakia Lumumba. I'm a longtime resident of Jackson, Mississippi, and a member of the People's Advocacy Institute, as well as the Mississippi Rapid Response Coalition. Today's water crisis has been decades in the making. And I know I don't have a lot of time, but my story is the story of Jackson, the story of black residents, of poor residents, of residents who, since 1970, saw both a significant drop in federal funding as well as intentional state divestment in Jackson's growing black population, all in an effort to expedite white flight to avoid school integration. This is where it started, right? It also started from a willful neglect, an understanding of the importance of infrastructure in the first place. When we talk about a budget, you'll often hear my brother Shokwe and Tarly Lumumba, Mayor Lumumba, talk about a budget as a moral document. Well, it is. And if we care about the wellness of our people, then we care about all of the ways that we stay well, including having clean water. In order to do that, we have to build our pipes. So this is what we've been experiencing in Jackson. Jackson has had plans in place. There's a narrative out there that there are no plans. There's a narrative that residents are just sitting on their butt, or black leadership is just sitting on their butt. But the reality is that Jackson has had plans in place for its water system since 1997. Even in 2013, residents came out in droves and voted to tax themselves an additional 1%. Y'all, we voted to tax ourselves an additional 1%, of which all that money would go towards our water infrastructure issues. And that little bit of money that we earn from that 1%, right, is still controlled by the state and is only a fraction of what the billions of dollars that we need to actually fix the problems of our water infrastructure, which the state has failed to do. You know, we talk about some of the most recent things that we've done. Even as early as 2020, there was legislation introduced to help not only help Jackson's water infrastructure, but also many rural communities in Mississippi that are experiencing the same water woes. And in 2020, state legislators passed this legislation, but the governor vetoed that. Governor Tate Reeves vetoed that legislation. depriving both Jackson and rural communities of the funds needed to actually fix our water infrastructure. So, you know, to not take up too much time, because there's so many more people that I want to hear from on this call who've been doing this work, who've been experiencing the pain and the suffering of not having water, not to be able to brush your teeth easily, not being able to take baths at different times, not being able to take showers, always having to boil your water. I remember as a child having to boil water. This is how long we've had this problem, and it's only gotten worse. So not only have Jackson leadership and the people of Jackson been patient, we've been self-sufficient. We have always acted responsibly to take care of our water needs. But it's very hard, y'all, to maintain a crumbling plant with no relief. We did not cause this problem, but we have been the only ones working to fix it, and it is about time for our state to do its part. You know, so I thank everyone for pushing and all of the water that has been sent our way, whether it's because a person in Arkansas or as far as Tennessee got in a car and filled their car up with water and dropped off 20, 30 cases to us, or whether someone got together with their community and sent an 18-wheeler down the water. We so thank you for your efforts. And we say, free the land. Thank you.
Free the land, clean the water. Can we say it like that?
Free the land. Right. Free the land, clean the water.
This is something that should be done and should have been done a long time ago. And it's important that you continue to lift this narrative, as you said, while the eyes of the nation. And you know, everybody that's listening, we should all say, I'm Jackson. Because not only can it happen here, it's happening other places. They just don't have the spotlight on them. And so we should see this and say never again and stand with the citizens of Jackson. Next on the list.
Danica Samuel.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm Danica Samuel. I'm a mother of 6 kids. I have been living in a poorest area of Jackson, Mississippi. My family life has been changing and a struggle to serve in a constant condition of no water, of simple as unclean water, while living in poverty. I never thought in my lifetime that I would have to constantly flush, get water, and tote my buckets to flush water. And also, I have to dip this water out of a bucket to take a bath, to cook. And constantly have to tell my youngest kids, please don't drink that. They can't wash their face. They can't brush their teeth. And I don't want people to feel like that. I'm just out here saying this is my everyday life, each and every day. With 6 kids, and it is very hard. And it's a struggle over and over and over and over again. And I might cry, but I feel like it can't get no better, no worse. It has to get better. And I thank Ms. Danielle Holmes. Not only do I boil water, cook for my kids, whatever, each and every day at 8:30, I make it to the site. At 9 to 7, I hit the streets with Poor People Campaign Organization each and every day, and pass out water through my whole entire city to help ones who are just like me. And yes, I am the poor community. I said a low-income community, and it's hard. Me and 6 kids each and every day. But I thank Lamoma Raquel for giving me the opportunity to help myself and my kids and Mississippians. And just for me to, and also give me strength to keep going each and every day. No matter how hard it gets, no matter how frustrated I get, I still have to do this because this is unfair to Mississippians. This is unfair to me to have unclean water. We need clean water to survive, to live. And this is just not no story. This is my life story each and every day. And I have to constantly pray and remind myself and look my kids in their eyes and see what they mean to me. My mayor is only one person. I was born in 1986. It's been like that ever since I was little. And I am 36 years old of age right now. He only one person. It been messed up way before.
Mama.
And he do the best he can. And my mayor just don't sit in no office. He be acting on the ground with us, He help us distribute that water. We can call him and he'll come out on the ground. We never, ever, Jackson, never had no mayor to come out on the ground and help us like Lumumba do. And I thank him. I thank Raquel. And my heart goes out to Miss Danielle Holmes. And I thank you, sister. And Poor People Campaign Organization is the best thing that ever happened to me. It also gave me the strength and the motivation that I could do it, that I am somebody.
Indeed, my sister, you are a modern day Elisha. Your words are like salt. We're going to get this water healed, not just for Jackson, but for all people. Sometimes moments come like this, but they are the beginnings of the transformation. And voices like yours are the most powerful. I think you hear that emergency siren on my computer. It's amazing to me that as you were speaking, that siren started ringing, because we do have a moral emergency. We got a water emergency, we got a political emergency, we got to free the land and clean the water. Don't you give up, don't you back up. Next family.
Next family is Mr. Chris Ellis.
Hi, my name is Chris Ellis. My wife, Stephanie, and I moved to Jackson a little over 4 years ago after we just fell in love with the city. And we knew that the city had infrastructure issues before we moved in. In fact, I was made very well aware of it by many friends and coworkers when I said that we planned to move and buy a home in Jackson. And we were advised, you may want to look in other areas. No, no, we love Jackson, and I'll tell you why. As we were walking through the neighborhood that we bought our home in, there was a huge pothole in the middle of the road. All the neighbors said, oh, that thing's been there forever. What the neighbors did was they put a big Christmas tree in there and they decorated it for Christmas. And what my wife and I saw in that was that we found a city full of people who can find joy in sorrow, a city full of people who can look at the situations around them and say, let's find joy where we're at right now, but let's also claw our ways out of it, right? So in that time, in the time since we moved here, we've seen a lot of those issues get resolved. We've seen roads be repaved. We know that the city's invested in doing this. We know that the city has put a plan in place to get the water issues taken care of. You know, we've been told by the media, well, there's no plan in the city of Jackson. And they said, well, actually, here's this 5-year plan that was already sent out. Oh, okay, well, it's only 5 years out. And we watch those goalposts move, right? So suddenly it's, oh, well, it's only a 5-year plan, and somehow that's not good enough. So it's been very frustrating for us to see, while we are having to buy water and bring it in from out of the area, we have had Kentwood water delivered to us for several months now after receiving these notices for a long time that says your water has lead and copper in it that may not be safe to consume. And, you know, we're thinking about ourselves bathing in this. We're thinking about babies being bathed in this.
Say that one more time. What did you say? I want folks to hear that. You said what kind of mineral?
We've been getting these notices. Now, I grabbed this from just a pile of them that I had. This one happens to be from November of 2021. Notices that say that there's lead and copper because the water quality parameters do not meet minimum values and that there has not been corrosion control properly installed. And all I can think about is, first of all, my wife and I, we want to start growing our family. I know I don't want to be bathing my babies in this. I'm thinking about people like Danica, who's already said she's got 6 babies. She's bathing her babies in this and are having to find a different way to take care of just keeping her babies clean. And I know that the state has the resources, and I know that the city has the plan and has the gumption to get it done. So what I get really bent out of shape about is, where is the disconnect? Where is this level of distrust coming from that is keeping the funds that are needed to implement these plans, to get them put in place? I've seen what happens when the city has resources to fix the issues in front of it. That pothole that made us move here because there was a Christmas tree in it, that pothole's been filled. All the big roads around us have been repaved. We know that when the city has resources, they get stuff done. And I know that there's a plan out there to get the water treatment plants fixed and to get our water system under control. My wife and I have been very, very fortunate that we've been able to get water delivered, that we have been able to go out and buy the water that we need. But we know that there are those, that there are neighbors of ours who aren't as lucky as we are. And I worry every day and every night about how those folks are going about their day-to-day lives, having to deal with this water problem, when I know that our city has a plan to implement it And I know that our state has the resources to help us fix it. But for some reason, it's taken this. It's taken all the media attention to even get our governor to have a single press conference with the mayor. We can't put aside our pettiness long enough to do more than that. We have to do better. We have to do better.
That was Jackson, Mississippi resident Chris Ellis, and before him, Danica Samuel and Rukia Lumumba speaking out at a national town hall on the water crisis in Jackson, Mississippi. This is On the Ground. I'm Esther Averam. Stay with us.
Somebody's hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore. Well, there's a crisis in Jackson, and it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. Well, there's a crisis in Jackson, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Next speaker we have is Brooke Floyd.
My children attend the local school district, JPS. My family loves this city, and we are committed to staying here. This is our home. As a mother of two young children and a longtime educator, I know all too well the strain Jackson's water crisis and continuing water and sewer issues has put on all of our families. The added stress of having to boil water just to cook and wash dishes, and the added cost of having to purchase drinking water for our families. For some of us, those costs combined with added plumbing costs due to the city's aging infrastructure have been in the thousands. The stress of worrying if the water is safe while pregnant and during our children's developmental years can be overwhelming. The closing of our schools due to water and sewer issues puts even more of a burden on our already overwhelmed families. Our city, like others in this state, have been denied support for years for our aging infrastructure, and we know why. We deserve clean water, a basic human right. We have been denied this for far too long. All we are asking is for the state to do what is right and support all of its citizens. We are the capital city. We deserve clean water, not privatized water. Our water, supported and repaired by our state. We are Jacksonians. We are Mississippians. We demand the state and the federal government fix our aging infrastructure and restore clean water to the residents of Jackson, Mississippi. Thank you.
Thank you for putting in the room that you're just asking for a basic human right. It's not some extra. It's not people begging for something. It's basic. And thank you for putting in the room. We need it to be fixed by the places where we pay our taxes to and not privatize. Because when you privatize water, you know what happens? The same political people that kept it from being fixed then turn around and get paid to fix it. Next speaker.
Yes, next speaker up is Penelope Barnes.
Hello. Hello, my name is Penelope Barnes. I'm a low-wage worker. I am formerly incarcerated, and I'm from Mississippi. I currently live in Jackson, Mississippi, and I've been here for 2 years, right out of incarceration. I'm affected by the water crisis here in Mississippi, in Jackson, because water is a human right. Clean water is a human right. And as of right now, I feel like my right has been violated and taken away from me because the simple fact of it is I can't even bathe, brush my teeth, wash my hair, do the things that us people, human people, are supposed to do. It's like the people that care for us is trying, but then you got people that's trying to push it all away. The way this has affected me so much is it's affected my mental and my physical health. I suffer from PTSD, bipolar, and some other things, but I also am a heart patient. I have a pacemaker, and I'm not supposed to be under any unnecessary stress, but right now I'm under the unnecessary stress because I'm having to wonder where my water's coming from because I can't get it out the tap. I can't do normal things out of the tap water that we are supposed to have. It's our human right. Clean water is a human right. And it's like I said earlier, it's been taken away from us. And it shouldn't be. It should be allowed to be out of our faucets where we're allowed to flush our toilets right, wash our hair, take care of our children. And we're not allowed to do that right now. We're having to depend on a bottle of water. And that's if you can get it. I have no transportation, so I'm having to depend on people to deliver it to me. Thanks to Ms. Danielle Holmes and the people that's done it, like the Rapid Response, the Mississippi Poor People's Campaign, the people on the ground, they've helped us so much by being able to bring it to us. Like I said, I just want my human right, clean water. That's all. We will not be silent anymore.
Thank you, Penelope. You're exactly right. And you know, this issue, you bring another issue to the table. What does it say when you can be incarcerated and get clean water and then come out of incarceration and can't get clean water? In fact, that's another form of incarceration, another form of being incarcerated, because now you're being incarcerated from a basic fundamental human right. That's why we can't be silent. That's why we can't stand down. That's why the whole nation and all of us have to stand up. This must be the moment that all of us say never again. And I'm not a lawyer, but I'm sitting here thinking of some things I'm going to say to the mayor. I'm going to say them offline because there's some things that people who have blocked, if they don't go ahead and fix this, that block this, you know, should have to face. And you should not have government policies by the state that cause you to get sicker, cause you to get worse, or potentially cause you to die. That is not equal protection under the law. I think we have one more family, Danielle.
Yes, we have Mr. Curtis Nichols.
Good evening, Reverend Barber, Mayor Lumumba, Danielle, Rakia, everyone on this call, all the different organizations. I appreciate your time. I'm actually on a film set, so please forgive me if people walk in on me. I just want to speak on behalf of the entertainers in Jackson, Mississippi, and business owners. A friend of mine, good friend of mine, started his coffee shop right on the day of the pumps collapsing. This is an issue that has been going on for a very long time. I remember when I first came to Mississippi in 1999, the mayor may not know this, but his father represented me. I came to Mississippi as an artist in residence teaching art, and there was an individual in Texas that murdered a police officer, and his name was similar to mine, and so his dad had to come to my rescue. I was in jail for 3 months before he realized that the other guy's name wasn't even spelled the same as mine. And his dad represented me pro bono and took care of that for me. When I moved back to Mississippi about 10 years ago, it was because of the people of Jackson, Mississippi that drew me there. I had more resources in Philadelphia and New York. However, I didn't have the human resource of Jackson, Mississippi. And since being there, what I've seen is some form of sabotage. I've spoken to many business owners where they have been told that if they would have it better had they moved outside of the city of Jackson, if they moved to Richmond. Costco's, one of the manager of Costco's told me that 3 years before they moved to Mississippi, they were told to stay away from Jackson, that they would have it better if they move into Madison or Flowood or Richmond and places like that. We're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of, it's a different virus hitting every other month.
And water is something that's needed for people to stay clean, stay healthy, and fight off these diseases. And we feel attacked. We feel attacked, and we feel as though this is some sort of coordinated effort to ruin our city. When this happened, it was nothing for me to shut down everything that I was doing and come and help out in any way possible. You know, run forklifts, deliver water to businesses, deliver waters to homes, take it door to door, however I needed to do it. I wanted to unite with as many organizations as possible to make sure that we all have what we need and that we know that we care for each other. And that's all I have to say.
This is On the Ground's coverage of the National Town Hall on the Jackson Water Crisis, sponsored by the Poor People's Campaign. Up next, the mayor of Jackson, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, is interviewed by journalist Roland Martin.
Is there a way for the federal government to bypass the federal government and send the money, bypass the state government and send the resources directly to the cities?
Well, let me say this. When the state receives money, out of these infrastructure acts, there's something called a state utilization plan, where they have to submit their utilization plan to the federal government and get approval for how it is going to be used. And so what we have to do is, make certain that there are sufficient guardrails around if the state does not have a plan that addresses cities like Jackson, that addresses our serious need, then we do need the federal government to step in and deny it all. That if you're not going to treat us with equity, if you're not going to have equal protection, the legal term that Bishop Barber raised, then we're going to deny funding too. Now, there are competitive funds the city of Jackson can go after and have gone after. A good portion of those federal funds, the portal opens up in October, right? We've gone after SRF loans, which are federal funds, right? Often the state makes this a narrative around why should we help Jackson? First and foremost, let's be very clear. It isn't the state's money to begin with. This is federal dollars that have been sent through the state of Mississippi with cities like Jackson in mind. And so, I have to lift up, not only have we commissioned a plan that was paid for by Soul Engineering, by AJA Engineering, and by Neil Schaefer Engineering collaboratively to produce a capital improvement plan that we have relied and created various documents that have been shared with our delegation, that have been shared with the governor, that have been shared with our congressional delegation, that emphasize the engineered estimates of what we need to do and a prioritized list of what has to happen. I have to lift up that my predecessors did the same thing. Whether we agreed on everything, I have to give them credit where it is due. Tony Yarbrough, who was immediately before me, lifted up issues with the water. My father lifted up issues with the water and our need to address this. I'm sure Mayor Frank Melton, who's no longer with us, did as well. But I have been able to confirm that Mayor Harvey Johnson has done it, right? And it even predates black leadership. It goes to a point where our city has begun to turn the corner of what the demographic represents. And so those are the things that we need our people to understand and know. Now, when it comes to this question of a plan, not only have we submitted a plan, but here's the other key conversation. Plans are an intended path forward, right? Or a suggested path forward. Sometimes there are disagreements, i.e. immigration plans, i.e. healthcare plans, and the like every presidential candidate has, right? And then they debate whether they agree with it or disagree with it. The problem that I have is not only the failure to recognize that we have had plans, but it is the failure to communicate around them, period. To say, well, maybe you need to include this. Maybe we need to see a little more of this, or maybe the timelines or the phases in which we do this would help us around this. What it simply means is that our priority hasn't been those who have responsibility, their priority. And that's the thing that hurts the most.
I was looking at one story, and it said that the state had somewhat of $1 billion surplus last year, and that when it came to Jackson's request from the state, Jackson got zero. Yeah. I'm also understand that Jackson sends more sales tax revenue to the state of Mississippi than any other city. So you have this surplus, and one of the reasons you have a surplus is because all the sales tax money that's coming from Jackson, plus the fact that for every dollar in taxes paid in Mississippi, four comes from the federal government. So really, when you say that's not Mississippi's money, that's the federal government's money coming in. And so it gives off the impression that there is a deliberate attempt to starve your city.
Well, let me say this. First and foremost, Jackson is three times larger than the next largest city, right? So Jackson's contribution to the state is far and wide beyond, you know, in any municipality there. And in addition to that, most capital cities in our country, because a good portion of the property in the city are state properties that you cannot tax, they get what you call payment in lieu of taxes. It recognizes the hardship of being the capital city, right? The limitations over your financial growth because you're the capital city. We don't get that in Mississippi, right?
Wow.
We don't get that, right? You know, it
so,
was.
So you have a lot of land where you have buildings and offices and all kind of stuff that's state property. So therefore, you got no shot at getting property taxes if businesses want to operate on that land.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so also, in addition to not getting our equitable share of resources, when we step in and fill in the gaps, when our residents who demonstrate shared sacrifices, we talked about the infrastructure, the 1% legislation or referendum that the residents voted by over 90% in order to tax themselves. Hear that again. The residents voted over 90% to tax themselves. There is a commission that is largely approved by the state that determines where that money gets to be appropriated and the master plan, or they have to approve the master plan over those dollars, right? And so they still leave this caveat that allows them to control. And so when it comes to things like, you know, not only do we have a drinking water and a most, that being the most critical issue, we also have a wastewater challenge where wastewater is coming up in people's homes, in their yards. And they have written in their bylaws, essentially, that we can't apply money to those issues, right? And it isn't enough money to deal with these challenges, but it was a start that the residents gave, where there's still control over that, right? There was legislation some years back called the CCID, which carved out state-owned property, carved out neighborhoods that I can't tell you why they're incorporated in it, right? That there is a special allocation of funds to their roads, to their infrastructure, and there's supposed to be money that goes towards extra protection around public safety, right? And so when you look at the state and their response here, you have UMMC, which is the medical center that is owned by University of Mississippi, and it's a state entity. While Jackson is dealing with water issues, they have a water tower, right? You look at the state fairgrounds, right? While Jackson has a problem, they have created a well that services them for water so that they don't have to deal with those issues. Time and time again, we see the state create guardrails that protect them, right? But don't protect the citizens of Jackson. And even if we said, hey, it's just about we have to protect our own assets, which is not a forgivable piece, then what about Jackson State? Jackson State University is a state-owned entity. They don't have a well that is run by the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the issues that come up time and time again. And so my fear is this, is that when our people are going through the most trauma, we don't want them to reach for a solution that actually puts them in a worse position than where they are. We've said free the land, clean the water, and make it public. We have to explain to people why it has to be made public. Because first and foremost, when you privatize the water, companies aren't coming in order to run that and invest in it because they have some benevolent purpose, right? They're trying to get a profit. And the only way that they can make that profit is to raise the price on poor people who already have affordability challenges. Why don't we want the state to run it, right? Well, when we're talking about these issues of equity, when we're talking about these issues of not getting our fair share, then why would we trust the state to run it? Furthermore, the state doesn't have the capacity themselves because they don't have the personnel necessary to run Jackson's water treatment facility, which is probably the most complicated in the country, but certainly the most complicated and complex in the state of Mississippi, right? So they're looking to get a third-party operations and maintenance group that they would contract out to work, to operate and fill in those gaps. Jackson was already in a discussion about an operations and maintenance group that we could contract, not privatize, but contract that out. So if they're in the same discussions with the same company that we're in, then their purpose is not for it to function correctly because they recognize the same company that we recognize. Their purpose is to capture the revenue. Thirdly, the last option that they have put out is the option of regionalizing, saying that you need more ratepayers on the system in order to maintain it. Well, on the surface, it makes sense. But when you think about it in a little more critically, it entirely breaks down. So when Jackson was larger, of course you had more ratepayers that could support the system and maintain it. As people moved out, that became a challenge. As we look at a regionalization model, what you have to understand is that when you bring in those other cities, yeah, you have more people that are paying to the system, but they depend on water in order to maintain their services, the revenue from water in order to maintain their services, just like Jackson does. And so you expand the perimeter of your responsibility. Now you have to take care of their pipes. Now you have to take care of their ditches. Now you have to take care of all of their infrastructure problems. And you're under a regionalized system where you have to believe that they're going to prioritize Jackson over these cities and communities that they continuously don't prioritize us over, that they don't give us our equitable share. And so I want to lift up right now, if I could ask the Poor People's Campaign to do anything right now, is to lift up these facts, to understand the history of this struggle, and to understand what is taking place. The lieutenant governor met more than 3 years ago with a concession firm about my water system, right? About how he could maybe enter into an agreement where they would pay money to take over the system and that they would be able to take the profit. Why is the lieutenant governor having a meeting 3 years ago about Jackson's water system? Why aren't they meeting with the leadership for us to control that and to talk about what we felt was in our best interest? I'm hearing from state legislators who are passing those same narratives. We have people who are willing to push us into a private session, a special session with the legislature just so that they could take over Jackson's water system. These are the things that have to be lifted up. These are the things that our people are crying out about.
We know in this country, you create a false narrative. And then you even get people in trauma, which is really an ugly thing, to catch people in trauma. That's like putting somebody under, waterboarding them and then asking them to answer a question. You know, you put them under trauma. So in essence, Jackson is being waterboarded by political processes and trying to make the citizen who just want the clean water make decisions, blame it on the current mayor, not tell the truth of things I'm hearing about what already could have been done. And we must say that it doesn't matter what color you are, if you are a political person in Mississippi, you should be standing with this mayor and the citizen. You should not buy into any of this foolishness about the privatization, where you know on the back end what's going to happen is there are people that call for privatization in some way or another, they are going to benefit if you follow the money, either benefit in political contributions and all kinds of things. But you said three things, man, I want to lift up. Number one, and Roland pointed this out, I want to push a little deeper, Roland. Not only is it not Mississippi's money, it's Roland Martin's money. It's North Carolina's money. See, the federal tax dollars that come to Mississippi come from all over the country.
Right.
So people all over the country should understand your money that you're paying and putting into the federal government to, in fact, help a place like this is being held up by the state. It's not even that it's not their money. It's all of our money, right?
Right.
That's what a federal appropriation is. And then the next two things is to hear this stuff about carve-outs. Now, I had not even heard that. You're going to carve out a park. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the same state park that they locked people up in back in the 1960s. if I'm not mistaken, that's the same area over there. You're going to carve out water for a fairground, and carve out water for a hospital. I get that, but then not for Jackson or for just fix the system. And then thirdly, this business of wrapping some tape around, that's my analogy. And as soon as you can get the pressure up a little bit and get a little clean, you just, all the media goes away and you stop
right
and quit the process of doing what needs to be done and fix the system. Now, y'all know I can't do it, Roland. I can't do it. But I really want to go to Nina Simone right now. But I ain't going to do it. I ain't going to do it.
Mississippi Goddamn.
My goodness. You know,
I ain't got no
come on. Come on.
Well, it gets deeper than that, right? So this is the latest effort to siphon off resources from Jackson. Instead of applying things to Jackson, they siphon it off. When I met with the lieutenant governor, I think now 2 years ago or better, on another legislative request for resources, it was asked of me for the rest of my team to leave. And in that, he said, listen, you know, there's a lawsuit that's going on right now where the state is trying to take over our airport and regionalize it, right? An airport that the residents of Jackson invested in, an airport which is a profitable institution. And so they wanted me to drop that lawsuit and give up our airport and say, well, maybe we'll give you somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million, right? My response to that is that I must be dumb and cheap, right? For us to give up an airport for $30 million, and that has to be the impetus by which I could even talk about things like the infrastructure needs of water, right? And so I want my people to be very clear. Don't allow somebody to step up and act like they're your savior now, right? Don't allow that wolf to come in sheep's clothing like they're trying to support us. When they tried to take our airport, there was an effort to take over our school district, right? And we were able to stop that. And now there's an effort to take over our water. None of this is coincidental.
Right.
None of it is coincidental.
And so just people understand, just like in Georgia, they have been trying, Republicans on the state have been trying to take the airport out of the hands of the city of Atlanta, knowing full well that is the greatest economic engine in the entire state. And so that's really what we're dealing with. And Barbara, you're absolutely right. You know, the nation's first black newspaper, Freedom's Journal. I got the mural in my office. It's March 16, 1827. They said, we wish to plead our own cause. Too long have others spoken for us. And so the reason these points are critically important, I had conservative, commentator, radio host, Eric Erickson out of Atlanta. He goes, well, the reason, Jackson has this problem is because, they haven't been collecting, the bills, collecting the payments from the folks in the city. And I replied back, I said, well, Eric, that's a lie. I got the mayor on my show right now. Why don't you book him on your show and talk to your conservative listeners and get the facts?
Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And that's going to wrap up this programming of Where We Are At here on WEFT 90.1 FM Radio. And of course, you can listen to us online at weft.org. But I'm going to wrap it up here. I believe Radio Theater is coming up. So please continue listening and have a good night.
Always like to let you know that if your organization has an upcoming fundraiser or wish to provide a service to the community, and be it a music or art event, workshop, or educational seminar, simply send a short script to WEFT at psa@weft.org, and we'll be sure to include it in our on-air public service announcements. You can also drop a flyer off here at the station or mail it to WEFT, 113 North Market Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61820.